Hey, you. Yeah, you pretending to work. Get Go to My PC now and access your PC from anywhere. Click the GoToMyPC.com link in your radio tuner to access your entire computer from any web browser. And did I mention it's free? GoToMyPC.com.
My 365. Maya Shones. This is WBAI in New York.
The following is a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
On Friday, November 29th, starting at 10 a.m. at 59th Street and 5th Avenue, celebrate Buy Nothing Day to stop the marketing of oppression. Help break through the corporate media silence on overconsumption, sweatshops, and fur, and take a stand against corporate greed. For more information, call 212-947-7744. That's 212-947-7744.
The 10th Annual African Diaspora Film Festival begins Friday, November 29th, and runs through December 15th. This eclectic mix of foreign, independent, urban, and classic films depicts the global African experience and will be shown at the Anthology Film Archives, 32 2nd Avenue, the Schomburg Center, 135th and Malcolm X Boulevard, and Teachers College, 525 West 120th Street in Manhattan. For more information, call 212-864-1760. That's 212-864-1760.
Saturday, November 30th, is the last day to register for the FEMA New York State Individual and Family Grant Assistance Program. Under this program's guidelines for the World Trade Center disaster, residents of the five boroughs of New York may be eligible for assistance for home repairs, replacement of personal property, reimbursement for air quality equipment, and repair or replacement of air conditioners. Except for Thanksgiving Day, registration phone lines will be open from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. On Saturday, November 30th, the lines will be open until 12 midnight. Interpreter services are available. Call 1-800-462-9029. That's 1-800-462-9029.
On Sunday, December 1st, starting at 4:30 p.m., come to the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center at 208 West 13th Street in Manhattan for an event called Out of the Darkness, the 11th Annual Rally and Candlelight March in Observance of World AIDS Day. The event will include performances and panel discussion at the center, followed by a candlelight march at 7 p.m. to Washington Square Park, where there will be a candlelight vigil from 7:30 to 8 p.m. For more information, call 212-620-7310. That's 212-620-7310.
On Monday, December 2nd at 8 p.m., the Manners College of Music presents La Belle Époque, a free concert at the Austrian Cultural Forum, New York, located at 11 East 52nd Street, featuring the music of Franck, Satie, Prokofiev, Isai, Bartok, and Tchaikovsky. For more information about this and many other free concerts, recitals, and lectures at Manners, call 212-580-0210. That's 212-580-0210.
This has been a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
Let us know what's going on in your community. Write to us at least 2 weeks in advance at WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005.
Or you can fax us at least 2 weeks in advance at 212-747-1698. That's 212-747-1698. I'm Victor Takeall.
I'm Vajra Kilgour.
And I'm Evelyn Andino Rosa.
Have a great day.
It's 5 p.m. in New York City. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio WBAI at 99.5 FM. We're on the internet at WBAI.org. Coming up at 6 p.m. will be a report of the day's news with the WBAI news team. Right now at 5 p.m., stay tuned for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
This
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, November 26, 2002. Police State America. That is the title of today's Taking Aim program. And we're starting with an editorial that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on November 21st, 2002. It's not too late to defend freedom, stated the Chronicle. Although the Chronicle is very much in a line with the so-called war on terrorism, the steps that were taken during the week of November 21st were just too much for the San Francisco Chronicle. And so they came out loud and clear saying it's not too late to defend freedom. Quote, "This has been a particularly bad week. A historically bad week for Americans who believe that government actions should be presumed public and personal behavior should be presumed private. The war on terrorism seems to have stripped this nation of its capacity for critical thinking when it comes to preserving a balance between civil liberties and security. Americans and their elected leaders," end quote, "are shrugging or cowering when they should be challenging the Bush administration's assault on basic freedoms. Just this week." Ralph?
Miami, actually, before continuing with what the editorial says, I want to observe that this very category of terror is, of course, the predicate for the repression. And it's disingenuous. In fact, it's really an illustration of what could be called the limits of liberalism, to take late distance from the very repressive measures which flow from the notion that the United States is being threatened by a handful of people funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, when in fact it is state terrorism of the U.S. government itself, which is the issue. And it is that very state terrorism which has been put into play in order to provide the pretext for this exact repression. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it put forth that the fantasy and the paranoiac delusion that there is a handful of people that were created by the Central Intelligence Agency who are more dangerous than 50,000 hydrogen bomb-bearing missiles require everyone to duck and cover, and then cry foul when the repressive measures are put into play, particularly when the very people who put them into play are the politicians who the same newspaper has supported.
Also, it's been a slippery slope, one that has been going on for many years, since the late 1970s, with the revamping of the police departments under the very famous SB1, which was crafted by Senator Ted Kennedy. But now to go to the Homeland Security Administration that has just been
Maya,
set up.
Well, Maya, this editorial, as you were starting to indicate, does sound an alarm, but as I say, it's a disingenuous alarm. The editorial continues, "The Senate approved the Homeland Security Act that gives the green light to mine a virtual centralized grand database on every American. The idea of the Total Information Awareness campaign is to draw from government and commercial records everything. Everything from your magazine subscriptions and credit card purchases to your college transcripts and divorce papers to individual dossiers. The concept was cooked up by John Poindexter, a figure in the Iran-Contra scandal, and it is not to wait until an American is suspected of terrorism or any wrongdoing for that matter to compile complete information, a file that tracks the life of everything done by everyone, including you." Editorial continues.
While the average Americans will be getting more scrutiny under this bill, the Chronicle states, the government will be subject to less. The Homeland Security Act, rushed through the Senate this week at the urging of the White House, broadly exempts many activities of this vast new department from the Freedom of Information Act. The rationale was to encourage private companies to cooperate with the agency without fear of exposing corporate secrets. But the result could be that a super agency of 170,000 employees with unprecedented powers to affect American lives will be largely shielded from public scrutiny.
And that is what we've been attempting to do over a year and a half now, to alert people to the fact that a proto-fascist state has been put into play, and that this entire fantasy of a terrorist threat to the American people is but the rationale for what the Chronicle now calls the top secret foreign intelligence surveillance court of review, which gives the federal government sweeping and total authority to listen to telephone conversations, read your email, search your private property, detain you at will, Americans who have not been suspected of terrorism or of anything. The editorial continues, the ruling by a three-judge panel blurs the distinction between spying on suspected terrorists and eavesdropping in domestic criminal cases. And the Wall Street Journal described, as the Chronicle cites, how the FBI's Project Lookout, hastily assembled on the basis of watch lists of possible associates of people suspected of terror, has left, as the Chronicle states, innocent Americans subject to total harassment and discriminations. And it states, companies have fed these error-filled lists into a database to screen job applicants and customers. People wrongly included on lists by typographical error or merely having a last name are finding it impossible to clear their names because these lists are widely duplicated and circulated and part of the permanent database of a spy state. Now, that's the Chronicle. The Chronicle is giving voice to the reality that the support for this regime's fake terror threat leads us to suffer. It flows from that. You cannot have it both ways. We have to question the premise. We have to expose the entire fraudulence of this terror campaign, and also expose, really, the treason at the top of the people who are now shredding the even the formal facade of constitutional rights in the United States.
For as the San Francisco Chronicle itself concludes, something that we've been saying for a long time, quote, the struggle for civil liberties is lost only if Americans concede, end quote. So that's the San Francisco Chronicle, November 21st, 2002, which you can see at sfgate.com. So let's look at the Homeland Security Act that passed in the Senate on November 19th and a week prior in the House. Now, the senators had agreed essentially on the bill. You have to remember that it was Senator Joseph Lieberman who proposed the Homeland Security Act, the consolidation of 22 departments into one cabinet-level department. He had proposed it in October of 2001, last year, shortly after the attacks on the World Trade Center. But it has been something that had been in his mind for quite some time, the consolidation of federal departments. In fact, the Republican Senator Phil Graham noted that 95% of the Homeland Security Act was written by Democrats. Remember, written by Democrats. That is the concession that Phil Graham made. So that the haggling that went on over these months was really over certain details. It wasn't over the concept. It wasn't over the majority of the concept. So what happens with this department of 170,000 employees that have normally been in 22 departments? It includes, as we've discussed in prior Taking Aim programs, the border and transportation security. Recently, 44,000 airport screeners were federalized and put in the Transportation Security Administration. That soon will be under the Homeland Security Department. The Customs Service, which had been under the Treasury Department. Animal and Plant Health under Agriculture. Emergency Preparedness and Response. All the agencies such as FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency for so-called disasters, but does so much more. under Health and Human Services, the chemical and biological, the radiological, the nuclear response units, the nuclear incident response teams, everything concerned with the nuclear power industry in terms of security, preparedness, what really goes under preparedness in the Office of Domestic Preparedness in either the FBI or the Justice Department is really the preparations for martial law, science and technology, so-called civil biodefense research projects, and both with animals, with the energy department, such as Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and also the biological warfare testing and analysis centers. And then, most importantly, information analysis and infrastructure protection. That's what they're calling the incursion into the lives of everyone in the United States. The so-called National Communications System of the Defense Department, the National Infrastructure Protection Center of the FBI, the Critical Infrastructure Assurance Office of the Commerce Department, the National Infrastructure Simulation Analysis Center of the Energy Department, and the Federal Computer Incident Response Center of the General Services Administration, and even parts of the Secret Service and the Coast Guard. So even though the FBI and the CIA remain as independent agencies, portions of the FBI will be taken over by the Homeland Security Department as well. President Bush has made it very clear that he is planning to set up, under the Homeland Security Department, its own intelligence apparatus, which at first is supposed to only look at intelligence information that comes from the FBI and CIA, but he has vast plans for this department in so that it becomes an independent intelligence unit under the executive, under the auspices of the president himself. So now we have the president setting up his own intelligence unit, and he sent people over to look at MI5 in England to copy the British intelligence unit. And we have also, if you'll recall, in the Defense Department, the plans of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld to set up an even stronger CIA-type intelligence unit in the Defense Department.
The real context here is that of Police State America. And the underlying understanding here, the predicate for this, is that we have here the apparatus of a fascist state. By the way, when Bob Woodward brought out his recent book, which has been getting a certain amount of attention, it's instructive because the Woodward book had included an interview with Bush. And Bush stated to Woodward, "I am the commander. I do not need to explain what I say and why I say things." That's the interesting thing about being the commander. Maybe somebody needs to explain to me why they say something. I don't owe anybody an explanation, unquote. And you see the sensibility and the mentality here with the private control of all information and the secret tribunals and the arbitrary determination of who is imprisoned without even the information being allowed to go to relatives or to family members, and the very fact of where they're held or what they're charged with and whether there's any evidence is all held secret. If this is not the apparatus of a fascist state, then there's no more meaning to that term. And we should not shrink from examining fascism, after all, is not a swear word. It's not a piece of political invective. It's a precise sociological description of a particular kind of state authority which capitalism imposes when it fears that its status with the population is in jeopardy. And those are the circumstances in the current crisis that capitalism as a whole globally faces. When recession and indeed generalized depression is on the order of the next period, that this apparatus of fascist control is being put into a complete place in the state apparatus today.
And I want to remark again, Ralph, that the Homeland Security Act is not just crafted by the conservative wing of the Democratic Party, Joseph Lieberman, but that Nancy Pelosi, the congresswoman from California, from San Francisco itself, so-called liberal
congresswoman, who is now the Democratic minority leader in the House. What she had said twice during an interview with Zachary Cole, who's the Chronicle of the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Bureau, she insisted that she and the Democrats, according to Coyle, quote, stand shoulder to shoulder with the president, end quote, in the war against terrorism. And she voted for the Homeland Security Act.
Nancy Pelosi, Maya, also, you know, who is being put forward as the liberal wing of the Democratic Party representative, has also declared that when the war starts against Iraq, she will support it 100%. And so you have the real character of the one big property party with two names, the showboating and the play acting about putting restraint is only what we used to call, and everyone else has understood to be, soft cop, hard cop.
And on the critical issue for labor, which is the bulwark of the Democratic Party support in the United States, on the critical issue of labor, the Democrats in the Senate didn't go all the way. They didn't really fight to oppose the Homeland Security Act, because the Homeland Security Act is stage two in the United States for the destruction of the prime basis of the unions in the United States, which is the public sector. Stage one actually was with Al Gore, with his reinvention of government and the layoff of 200,000 to 300,000 workers. Another stage was NAFTA, again supported by the Democrats, and which destroyed many of the industrial jobs in the United States.
Well, this is class war. This is class war. The structure of capitalist rule is designed to wage permanent and class war on working people in the United States. The Democratic Party, which purports to be supportive of the rights of workers, in fact is supportive of the trade union top bureaucracy, which signs sweetheart contracts over the heads of the ranks and files, has a 13-to-1 earnings ratio over what their rank and file members earn, are a layer of the bureaucracy that is in total collusion with the ruling class, and that is what the Democratic Party is linked to, that trade union bureaucracy whose function it is to deliver the workers into the arms of one of the big capitalist parties. And if we don't get clear about this, if we continually perpetuate illusions about the one or another wing of the capitalist ruling class as a political alternative for working people, we only prepare for the demolition of all semblance of rights. And paradoxically, within the history of the United States, in fact, of other societies, the relationship between reform and revolution is very clear, i.e., when people are organized and mobilized outside of the control of the ruling parties, they are met by concessions. It's only when there is a massive civil rights movement outside their control, or when the workers mobilized as in the 30s, that the ruling class makes concessions in order to reincorporate and co-opt. The minute that the class is devoid of its own independent political mobilization, those concessions are taken back. Paradoxically, the only way you ever get reforms, which are what concessions are, is when you are mobilized outside of the control of the rulers, when you have your own political voice, when you're in the streets, when you have your own program, your own leadership, and it isn't under their aegis and their manipulative control, then they make concessions to put the genie back in the bottle. Not unless that occurs. And when we stop that, when we are deluded into supporting these folks, these fakers, these spokespersons for ruling capital, all those concessions get removed. And there you have the Democrats making noise about the destruction of unionized labor in the public sector, which we'll be dealing with in a moment. But when push came to shove, they conceded and they supported and they allowed for and they sustained the demolition of union labor within the public sector of this country.
And as I said, to go back to Al Gore and Bill Clinton, key things that happened which set the stage, that's why I say this is stage two in the attack, the assault on the working class in terms of the collective strength of the working class and its representation by unions. And that was the importance of the passage of an anti-striker replacement Right, to prevent striker replacement bill during the Clinton administration, when Bill Clinton and Al Gore did nothing to see to the passage of that in Congress. And also, it, with the reinvention of government, was not only the layoff of over 200,000, close to 300,000 federal workers, it was the imposition of contracting out. And the what happens in a lot of state and county governments now, where the unions have to bid against contractors to see who's going to come in with the lowest bid, whether it's going to be the union labor, the public sector workers, or the private sector workers. But before we go into the real assault on the working class, let's go back to some of the attacks against privacy and individual liberty, the civil liberties that are so crucial to the Homeland Security Act and to the creation of police state America.
One point, Maya. The downsizing of government, the reinvention of government that the Democratic Party has put forward in the period of Clinton and Gore, which is essentially embracing the dominant ideology of which is usually associated with the Republican Party. What this means is that the fiction of a smaller government is put forward as a cover for the enormous increase of total governmental state dictatorial control over every aspect of life in the United States. The vast bureaucracy that sustains the military and the intelligence agencies. The subsidizing of all the corporations is the biggest increase of arbitrary government power conceivable. Downsizing the government is a euphemism for cutting all social programs, for eliminating any function of government that has any reform content for the mass of the population of the United States. Whenever you sign on to the ruling ideology in one form or another, you wind up becoming a tool and a pawn. And that's what we're finding to be the real character of the Democratic Party and its supporters in the United States.
That's a good point, Ralph, because what they did with the military is they made it seem as if they were downsizing the number of soldiers in the U.S. Army and the other sectors of the military, but in fact what they did is to contract out the work that the soldiers used to do. One good example is the construction of military housing and even the construction of bases, as we've done in other programs about Brown and Root across the globe, but so too here in the United States.
That's for plausible, that's for plausible deniability.
Out.
That's so that they can carry out their most heinous crimes in secret, and they can dissociate formal responsibility by having their own operatives doing it on a nominally private basis. But the vast increase in the bureaucracy, the state apparatus for military production, military control, the vast intelligence apparatus, hundreds of billions of dollars that are assigned to this, and the trillions that are stolen and placed in offshore accounts to create a paramilitary state on the sly, is an expression of the vast increase in government and bureaucratic size for the purpose of repression, for the purpose of consolidating capitalist control. The only downsizing of government that goes on is the demolition of reforms and of any kind of public responsibility for the interests of America's workers and the vast majority of our people.
And it's the downsizing of the public workers as a unionized collective expression where they have some power as employees. And that's why there's so much contracting out, whether it's of the information services or social services, as President Bush wants to impose with his religious-based social service agencies. Or if you even look at the city level, I'm sure same is true as in New York, as in San Francisco, most social social services, direct services to the aging, to children, are supplied by independent nonprofit contractors, and the city administration contracts out to these for the most part non-union nonprofits. But let's now go to William Sapphire, conservative, ultra-conservative columnist, appearing in the New York Times regularly.
The speechwriter for Richard Nixon, and a person who has been a virtual mouthpiece for the Sharon Likud wing of the Zionist state, and indeed a figure who has been one of the earliest proponents of the war, the destruction of Iraq and its basic fragmentation and the seizure of its oil, William Sapphire.
William Sapphire, nonetheless, has been the beacon of journalists, pointing out the incursions that are going on against civil liberties here in the United States. And an important column appeared November 14th in the New York Times. Some of you may have seen it because people have been spreading it around via the Internet. But if you haven't, we would like to refer you to You Are a Suspect by William Sapphire.
Now, Sapphire, as you say, Maya, notwithstanding, this is his own contradiction, after all. Here's a man who has embraced the right wing of the apparatus of state control, but who is terrified by the implications of what he supports. And he writes these extraordinary columns, such as the one that you've just cited. There were several previous to that, but this one called You Are a Suspect. Every purchase you make with a credit card, every magazine subscription you buy, every medical prescription you fill, every website you visit, every email you send or receive, every academic grade you ever get, every bank deposit you make, every trip you book, every event you attend, every transaction and communication you contemplate will go into what the Defense Department describes as a virtual centralized grand database. To this computerized dossier on your private life from commercial sources, add every piece of information that the government has dreamt of having about you. Passport applications, driver's licenses, bridge toll records, judicial or divorce records, complaints from nosy neighbors to the FBI, your lifetime paper trail, plus the latest hidden camera surveillance that you have the super snoopers dream of, total information awareness about every U.S. citizen. And Sapphire continues, this is not some far-out Orwellian scenario. It is what is happening to our personal freedom when John Poindexter gets this unprecedented power. Remember Poindexter? Remember Poindexter? Indicted for selling missiles secretly to Iran and using the illicit proceeds, Sapphire continues, to illegally support Contras in Nicaragua. Poindexter? Convicted of 5 felony counts of lying to Congress, making false statements, suppressing information, destroying documents. And then this is the person who has the total power for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. As he calls it, Sapphire says, this ring-knocking master of deceit is back again with a plan even more scandalous than Iran-Contra. He is engaged now in realizing his 20-year dream, I'm quoting still, getting the data mining power to snoop on every public and private act of every American. He is determined to break down the wall between commercial snooping and secret government intrusion. This disgraced admiral dismisses the differentiation between public and commercial activity as bureaucratic stovepiping. And he has been given a $200 million initial budget to create total computer dossiers on 300 million Americans. This is Poindexter's assault, he continues, on individual privacy, which rides roughshod over every supposed oversight. He continues at length in this article to delineate, and by the way, it's instructive to note that Sapphire is particularly outraged by the Latin motto of a Poindexter's Pentagon office insignia. And the insignia shows a pyramid with a beaming eye whose rays cover everybody in the United States, as is shown by the depiction of faces of people in a globe. Knowledge is power. Exactly, Sapphire writes. This government's infant knowledge about you is power, total power over you. This is William Sapphire on the proto police state, the fascist state now in place in this country.
Police State America. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, listener-sponsored radio. You can reach us now at WBAI at our voicemail, 212-209-2953. That's 212-209-2953. Or you can write to us at Taking Aim at Pac Bell, that's Pacific Bell, PACBELL.net. Again, Taking Aim at PacBell.net. Or at our post office box, P.O. Box 6345, Vallejo, V as in Victory, A-L-L-E-J-O, California, 94591. Now, to go back to the total information and awareness, this is a project that Poindexter is in charge of under the new Security Advanced Research Projects Agency, part of the Homeland Security, but it is being done under the Pentagon, the Department of Defense. And so far, they're starting, it's proposed to be this mass $200 million budget, and they're starting with an initial pilot project. And with the initial pilot project, they've been looking to various computer companies, or such as SRI, Stanford Research, to actually handle it. And the Defense Department is very excited about this, as you can imagine they would be, this total surveillance of American people. Now, the division of the Defense Department, one I hadn't known about before, that has actually been doing this, is called DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects. Now, DARPA is not the only a government company, government division, excuse me, that is going to have increases in its R&D, its information projects that invade our lives. It turns out that there's an 18% increase throughout the military just for research and development. And it's not just this department, but many other departments in the federal government are getting similar boosts for such research, such as the National Institute of Health. And the Wall Street Journal goes into documenting that. So it's this total invasion of privacy. And what does this mean for people? It's aside from controlling information about each and every one of us, having all that information, the government has also set about to control the information that goes out over the internet. They have sent out directives. Now, this is one that's very hard to accept, but it is actually taking place. And the directive, the memo that came out from the U.S. Department of Education on May 31st, 2002, is called the Criteria for Keeping Information on the Web. And although they sent it out in May, it was written in February. And what they said is that all information on the internet for the Department of Education that is, quote, content is either outdated or does not reflect the priorities, philosophies, or goals of the present administration, end quote, should be removed. Now, this means, according to people who've been investigating this, that 13,000 documents of the 50,000 documents from the Department of Education are possibly going to be removed because they don't agree with the ideas of the Bush administration. Now, we've seen this happen already already this is happening with the Center for Disease Control website, where they took down, they took away, they eliminated all the information on condoms, and the condoms particularly as a way to assist in a war against AIDS. And the reason they did that is, quote, because the administration favors only abstinence-only programs on teen sex. So already there is censorship for of information that is going on. As well, the Energy Department, for instance, has abandoned, has eliminated a public website called PubScience, which was an indexing of academic and government reports. And they did this because they had a lot of pressure from corporations who wanted to make money from putting up these sites. So here we have the basis of invasion of privacy and also censoring public information that would have been readily available from the government. Ralph?
It's not only the conservative columnists like Sapphire, or for that matter, the liberal editorialists of the San Francisco Chronicle who are starting to sound the alarm. Here's Molly Ivins in her article called Scary Times in the USA, reprinted from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and the Boulder Daily Camera. Reading the newspapers is reminiscent, she writes, of those novels warning of the advent of fascism in America, such as It Can't Happen Here, by Sinclair Lewis. To quote from a real authority on the subject, fascism should more properly be called corporatism, since it is the merger of state and corporate power, unquote. Benito Mussolini, this in the column now of Molly Ivins. The most hair-raising news du jour, she writes, is this total information awareness system, a giant computer government-controlled network which will spy on Americans and will be run by none other than by John Poindexter of Iran-Contra fame. It will provide the intelligence agencies and law enforcement with instant access to information from your email, telephone records, credit cards, bank transactions, travel records without a search warrant. The Homeland Security Bill undermines the Privacy Act. In fact, it destroys it, she writes, which was intended to limit what government agencies can do with personal information. And you think you can trust a government to keep this information solely for the task of tracking terrorists, she writes? The Wall Street Journal reports this week that shortly after September 11th, the FBI circulated vast numbers of names of people it wanted to question to scores of corporations around the country. A year later, the list has taken on, she writes, a life of its own, with multiplying and error-filled versions passed around like bootleg music. Companies have fed versions of this list into their database. They are now all over the United States. They use them to screen job applicants, to evaluate customers, to determine what competitors may do. The list includes people who are not suspects of anything, just people that the FBI wanted to talk to, or about whom someone made some negative comment. And the Wall Street Journal reports, a bank security officer sent the list headed suspected terrorists to a website based on nothing more than this compilation of false information, gossip, and malice against random individuals. And she writes, the great writer on the subject of totalitarianism was George Orwell. And 1984 is worth rereading. G.W. Bush popped up the other day to announce to us that he is fighting a war for the sake of peace. That's, if that's not vaguely Orwellian, it's a direct steal, she writes. And she continues in this article to give examples of the absolute and total elimination of individual rights, characteristic of what she calls the fascist state, the totalitarian state. And the theme is picked up by the Washington Post in its article of November 16th, Total Information Awareness. Anyone who deliberately set out to invent a government program with the aim of terrifying an Orwell-reading public cannot improve on the Information Awareness Office, tucked away in the outer reaches of the Defense Department, brandishing an eerie and cryptic logo, an all-seeing eye atop a pyramid, and the slogan, Knowledge is Power. This office, headed by Admiral John M. Poindexter, who was convicted of five felony counts of lying to Congress, destroying official documents, and obstructing the congressional inquiry into the affair, has a fast and breathtaking control over what happens to people in the United States. And the article is elaborate in its delineation of this reality. And finally, then, another instance, A Super Snoop's Dream, by Audrey Hudson in the Washington Times. And it talks about the Super Snoop's dream of authorization to collect all information on every individual in the United States into a centralized grand database. And it describes this as a, quote, Orwellian Big Brother government apparatus on the model of 1984. This in the Washington Times, the Washington Post, the Washington Times, the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, the official and formal and bourgeois press in the United States, suddenly confronted by the reality of that which they have supported and that which they have brought to bear.
I would like to take note that as part of the original Homeland Security Act, there had been a proposal for TIPS that was using the postal workers and UPS drivers, people who had personal contact with you, me, neighbors, so forth, as they made deliveries to spy, to inform. And that was defeated as part of the Homeland Security Act. But Governor George Pataki in New York on September 16th, he took, according to Nat Hentoff in the November 15th article of the Village Voice, says the governor took time from campaigning to announce by executive order the start of a new toll-free statewide public security TIPS hotline that Pataki assures us, quote, will enable citizens from throughout the state to report information about suspected terrorist activity. Now, this goes into some of that, the response such as with Project Lookout, because you can send in information. It may not be true. It could be a false tip. You could people have been known using the FBI hotlines to get back at the neighbors or friends or divorced wives or husbands, turn them in, and give misleading information. But the governor's press release adds, quote, if a lead is meaningful and can be corroborated, the information will be given to the Joint Terrorism Task Force for investigation. So right there in New York State, with the New York State Police working in conjunction with the New York State Office of Public Security and the Joint Terrorism Task Force, you have instituted a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week program for spying and vigilantism of people in New York State.
Miley, in the New York Times yesterday, or rather I should say on Sunday, just exactly what you're saying is gone into with a story called Privacy for Me and Not for Thee. And they make the distinction between the commercial arena, in which there's constant surveillance, and the government arena, and they state, the private sector can't garnish your wages. It can't take your child away. It can't arrest you. The government will do all these things. And the government's power is vividly illustrated, the article states, in two federal appeals court rulings last week. On Monday, a special federal appeals court, the United States Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review, a secret body, issued a distinction granting the Justice Department broad new powers to use wiretaps obtained for intelligence operations in all judicial cases. It reversed lower court decisions that had limited these powers out of concern for citizens' privacy. Over 20 years, court decisions had erected a wall between the department's intelligence and other judicial activity. In its reversal, the Special Appeals Court reined in the protections. This is a giant step forward, Attorney General John Ashcroft said. This revolutionizes our ability to investigate and prosecute. And think about the implications of what this article continues to point out. On Monday, the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, based in St. Louis, held that police can obtain email messages and by faxing a warrant to Yahoo, the internet service, and relying on Yahoo's technician to produce the materials. And in effect, the article states that the technicians have been deputized by the government. Everybody now is part of a vast spy apparatus in jeopardy themselves of becoming its victim if they don't comply. That is the character of the totalitarian state, replete with documentation in the media of the ruling class itself.
Well, I can see right now this is going to be a two-part program, and we will continue with a lot of the information that we gathered next week. But for right now, I suggest you go to the New York Times, Tuesday, November 19th, to see their long article on Court Overturns the Limits on Wiretaps to Combat Terror. And included in it is an excerpt, because it was a very long ruling from the FISA appeal court, and it's an excerpt on the court's ruling on the Justice Department's broad powers and the fact that they consider that the Justice Department should have always had these powers. Because one thing I would like to go into in the time we have now has to do, again, with invasion of privacy, and that is searches. It's now becoming, people are becoming accustomed, unfortunately, to being searched as they go on airplanes, random searches. The other day as I was going on an airplane, there was a very elderly man who was saying, you're asking me to take off my shoes, but I can't get my shoes back on unless you have a shoehorn for me. And the screeners looked bewildered and stated, but these are the federal regulations. You have a choice. You either take off your shoes or you cannot get on this airplane. And so it's opening people's bags, running machines over them. But what people don't realize is that, and this was pointed out in the San Francisco Chronicle again, and it leads us to the Detroit Free Press. Because what is pointed out by the Detroit Free Press is that under federal law, the Border Patrol can set up checkpoints up to 100 air miles from any international border or from the shoreline. Within the first 25 miles, federal agents can stop drivers who seem suspicious, and they can search and conduct surveillance of private property. And the Chronicle opinion writer Harley Sorensen states, think of the places within those 100-mile or 25-mile limits, to name a few. New York City, San Francisco, and also, let's say, the New York region, that includes New Jersey and Connecticut. Los Angeles, Seattle, Savannah, Jacksonville, El Paso, San Diego, Portland, Sacramento, Bangor, Buffalo, Detroit, and Tucson. And what's happening, there was an article in the Caledonian Record from St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Locals come face to face with Homeland Security. Calvin Kittredge and his wife June were on their way home to Danville, Connecticut from Colebrook, New Hampshire last Monday. This is November 12th. That happened on November 11th. When they came upon a checkpoint operated by the U.S. Border Patrol on Route 3 in North Stratford, New Hampshire. They were held up between one half and 1 hour answering questions and having their vehicles searched. Law officials were out of their vehicles with their guns drawn. Four officers approached his vehicle, two on each side, with their hands on their rifles. One officer, who identified himself as an agent from the Federal Immigration Department, asked the questions. They were asked to verify their residency. They were asked why they were in New Hampshire, how long they were in this state, and where they were going. And they even took the back seat out of the car to look underneath and investigated their trunk. Now, in Michigan, for the first time, federal agents on November 12th started questioning drivers and passengers one by one at unannounced stops around Port Huron and Trenton, and they're even going into neighborhoods in Detroit.
Maya, Jim Crawford, the U.S. Border Patrol intelligence agent for the Detroit sector stated, "Checkpoints are a definite thing, part of our standard operating procedure." And he cites the federal law, which allows them to set up checkpoints within 100 miles of any international border, but he cites additional federal laws permitting them to operate checkpoints and stop suspicious drivers wherever they determine it to be appropriate. They've established internal checkpoints in Texas and California, New York, Vermont, and New Hampshire, and they are expanding these. And the checkpoint issue had actually reached the Supreme Court in 1976, which claimed that that warrantless stops, warrantless stops, and searches do not violate the Constitution. So they have complete license now. Of course, it's on the books on the basis of the Supreme Court decision in 1976, but now being put into full implementation. And in an INS release issued in Detroit, 245 new agents are permanently deployed now for this seizure and stop program, which will be aided by aircraft and the installation of remote video surveillance systems, which will be connected to satellite, and the deployment of mobile traffic checkpoints in strategic locations across the United States. This comes under the cover of Border Patrol. It is, in effect, putting into play the very thing that CNN described in its Army School of Urban Control of setting up checkpoints across the United States for the ultimate seizure and detention of vast numbers of people in this country.
Now, according to the Detroit Free Press, along with these so-called Border Patrol searches, you know, one by one, I mean, stopping people for a half mile, backing up traffic, and so on. What they say, quote, "Every aspect of Arab immigrant life is being watched, from IRS scrutiny of international Muslim charities and business to FBI surveillance of local meeting places, according to court records and interviews with federal officials, Muslim leaders, and defense lawyers." Detroit is one of our major offices in the national probe, said John Bell Jr., who retired in September as head of the FBI in Detroit. Now, this is going on not only in Detroit, but in other areas where there are emerging Arab populations, such as Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York City. According to Mark Corallo, the U.S. Justice Department spokesman in the Washington, D.C., quote, "It is the largest investigation in the history of the United States." Now, it's not so long ago during World War II where the Japanese, Italians, and German were suspect, or through COINTELPRO, anyone who supported civil rights or was against the war in Vietnam. So now we have the entire Arab community as a suspect. And this you can read all about in the Detroit Free Press, November 11th, 12th, 13th. The articles go on over a period of days. Now, in terms of tips and things like that, I have to tell you that the U.S. State Department has made official pitches on Arab cable TV channels for a program called Rewards for Justice, which offers cash for information on so-called terrorism. The U.S. government is offering cash rewards to people to become snitches and informants. Now, last year, 8,000 Arab or Muslim men were sought for questioning, and that included 930 in Michigan alone. Imagine what is going on.
Maya, the same theme was elucidated in the New York Times article of November 17th, "Agencies Monitor Iraqis in the United States. The previously undisclosed intelligence program involves tracking thousands of Iraqi citizens who are attending American universities or working at private corporations. The targets of the operation are electronically monitored under the authority of the national security warrants. Others are being selected, as you say, The article states, for recruitment as informers. And the program is being intensified in preparation for the, quote, arrest and detention of Iraq sympathizers. The Iraq Domestic Intelligence Program is in addition to the government's continuing effort. The article continues.
And we're out of time, so I just want to end with one program that's going to start December 2nd, and that's the Justice Department will require male visitors from 13 additional countries. This is in addition to Iran, Iraq, Libya, Sudan, and Syria. They're now going to require registration of any male 16 years and older from Afghanistan, Algeria, Bahrain, Eritrea, Lebanon, Morocco, North Korea, Oman, Qatar, Somalia, Tunisia, the United Arab Emirates, and Yemen.
But lest you think that this is confined to people from the Middle East, citizens or not, their origins from the Middle East or from Central Asia, in the Washington Post on November 24th, it's documented material witness law has people in limbo. Authorities have arrested and jailed people as potential grand jury witnesses. They are not charged with any crimes. They are considered material witnesses. They are held incommunicado. They are not allowed to have their presence disclosed. Brothers and sisters, this is the apparatus of the fascist state.
Police State America. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We'll be with you next week. You can reach us at 212-209-2953 or write to us at takingaim@pacbell.net. Next week, we will go into the assault on workers.
Yes, there'll be nothing but the blues on WBAI on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, between 3 and 5 p.m. This is Dred Scott Keys. Join me as we travel to the Mississippi Delta Blues Festival's Juke House stage, featuring local artists like Eddie Cusack, Bernard Jenkins and the B-Cats, Jackie Bell, Eden Brent, and many more. That's Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, from 3 to 5 p.m., only on listener-sponsored non-commercial radio WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.